with an education of tranquility, thankfulness.
You were saying, I think it was mentioned in the
last hour that our state of dynamic tension, our state of top down, was really in itself, might be misleading to call it a state because it has a dynamic of its own. And I would guess, I'm extrapolating, we're changing, the world's changing. We're not liable to stay if we attempt just to maintain that force of equilibrium. At that point, we're going to be staying. It makes me wonder about the state of tranquility as one where you seem to be experiencing force of equilibrium. Is that the kind of thing that is? Is it a very fleeting thing, or if it's the kind of thing that's going to last for has some duration? Does that mean that perhaps we have grown in virtue and we're able to go with this, you know, to walk through this these ice flows rather smoothly? Or, because seemingly it's the bomb's dropping out from under us all the time. It's, you know, it's kind of
yeah. Well, it does have a tendency to drop out. There's no question. I really think it's going to differ, John, from person to person, the extent of when you're in the third time and when you're in the second time. I really do. I just would point out, though, that I found this after I started doing all of this and checked it out against the Ignatian text. And another way in which he describes that state of tranquility in the third time is when I am in equilibrium. On a balance. Well, I think that it substantiates the position. I mean, it helps to substantiate it. When I am in equilibrium, on a balance.
So you're on a teeter-totter in the second one, right?
Yes.
And you keep running and smashing one side and smashing the other, and you kind of keep going until you can hold it in the middle for a moment to catch the breath to make any rational decision. I'm going to do this with my life.
The decision is to follow the movement that leads to the equanimity. That is the decision. That's the matter. The matter of the decision is right in those inclinations.
Say there's an important question in your mind. You know, let's say the call is coming, the first one. But then there are questions in terms of which way it will follow, those kinds of things. You can't make those in two. You've got to make them in three. That you make decisions to run
it depends.
This way
it's not. It's not the nature of the decision that makes the difference between the second and the third time. It's the state that you are in. You say you can take the same subject matter for a decision and employ the second time or the third time, depending on what state you're in. That's what makes the difference between the two. Not the matter for the decision, but you. Are you agitated or are you at rest?
And you could theoretically then make the same right decision in stage two or three.
That's right. That's right.
And so you don't sit around waiting for tranquility to come to make the decision.
Sometimes you can't.
Yeah, right.
You can't. Point of, I think, what he's saying. You know, he's trying to come up with something that would cover all moments of major decision that we have to make.
If we don't have that, like Aristotle, and on the leisure, we're contemplating.
Okay. So, just to repeat this very quickly here, in the second time, I'm not able to arrive at a decision by simply rationally weighing the pros and cons of the various alternatives. I'm not free to do that. I have to rather discern where the different movements are leading and go with those that lead to equanimity. It's a matter of discriminating affectivity. Will a given decision place me in the integral truth of my humanity or not? And I know that by that, where it's leading. Place me in the integral truth of my humanity or not. But in the third time, I'm already in that integrity of consciousness. And so I am able to utilize intelligence and reason the creative vector, rather than discriminate the healing vector, I use the creative vector to size up a situation, weigh the pros and cons of going the different alternative ways, and, as St. Ignatius says, see to which side reason inclines me. I'm making use of attentiveness, intelligence, rationality. But the precondition for doing that is that my psyche is in the integral balance. St. Ignatius says, for the third mode, and this is the language I just read to John, I must be in equilibrium on a balance, ready to follow that which I feel to be more for the glory and praise of God our Lord and for the salvation of my soul. Ready, that readiness, that equilibrium, that poised equilibrium, I have to be there. Then I employ the third mode. If I am not in that equilibrium, I am not to make use of the third mode. I'm not to pile up reasons pro and con. Why? Because I can't weigh them freely. I don't have the freedom. And when my psyche is undergoing agitation, I don't have the spontaneous use of my creative powers. And I have to wait for and follow the movement of the healing vector to bring me to that, and I have to go with the decision that I make is what will lead to that. And then just to repeat the point I made in response to your question, what makes the difference then is not the subject matter, but the person, the state of the person. The same subject matter can be dealt with second mode or third mode, it depends on where you're at.
If the person has never gone through the first mode, though, and is this offered?
Oh, yeah, these are not chronological or anything like that. They're not chronological. They're just, you know, I could reverse the order. Just three different times. All right, finally, and on that interpreting the rules, that's really claiming too much for what we're going to do in number F there, interpreting the rules for the discernment of spirits. Not going to do that in 5 minutes. What I want to say there is this, that for those of you who are familiar with Ignatius's exercises, the rules that he puts in there all have to do with the second time of election, when one is moved by consolations and desolations. All those rules have to do with the second time. He tells you, when he discusses the third time, he tells you how to do it. Rationally weigh the pros and cons of the various alternatives. Or do things like, ask yourself, well, at the point of death, what would I have chosen to do? Or, if someone else were to come to me with the same question that I'm confronting, what would I tell that person to do? You see, but you need a distance. You need an affect of freedom in order to be able to operate in that way. That's the way he tells you to do that. Those are his rules for the third time. See? But the whole section in the spiritual exercises called Rules for the Discernment of Spirits deals with the second time. How do I discriminate these agitations that I feel? And so if you want to go and study those, which I'm in the process of trying to work some stuff out there, but it's not very far along, but I think those rules all provide indications for judging which movements lead me to equilibrium and which movements lead to displacement. Which lead me to, say that to Kierkegaard's aesthetic sphere, before God in despair, not to will to be oneself. Or Kierkegaard's over-accentuation of the ethical at a certain point, before God in despair, to will to be oneself. And which movements lead me to being grounded transparently in God. And I think that is the creative tension of limit and transcendence is the sign of that being grounded transparently in God. Now, as I say, this is all, it's work that I'm trying to do in contemporary language to try to interpret some of the things in the tradition. But so far, it seems to fit in my understanding. Any questions?
Comment to something about listen about the consciousness of Jesus Christ.
It's not integral to what we're talking about, but it's just a point here. You know, if you want to take all these categories and start doing a systematic theology on it, which I think you can do, in Lonergan, foundations is foundations for doing the systematics. What we've been doing here is foundations all through the course. So you want to take these categories and start talking about Christ, for instance, in Christology. Well, I'm just trying to indicate how you can use the categories that we've been using to talk about Christ's consciousness. And what I would do there is to say that, all right, Christ's human consciousness is the limit transcendence polarity that we've been talking about. But that is, for him, simply the limit that he has taken on and taking on human flesh. And there is also in Jesus a divine consciousness, which sets up another polarity and a further tension in his consciousness. Further tension beyond the one that exists in ours. See.
Is there any polarity in the divine consciousness?
That's another question. I'm not sure.
I'd have to do some more work on that before I could answer one way or another.
So we end the course on a question. Thank you very much.
Thank you.